podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the JMS Boxing Podcast with me, John.
I'm Sam.
And today, we're going to the unlicensed scene. Something that me and Sam have been on with Dan Levitt. How's it going?
Yeah, good.
How are you? How's your things?
All good.
So I'll just make it nice and basic, strip it back with all my guests to start on. When did you first start lacing up your gloves?
So for me, to be honest, I was probably quite late. So I had like a bit of an angry kid thing as a youngster, but loved the boxing, you know. Like I remember the first thing I ever see was Bruno Oliver McCall. And my dad got me up, you know, watch it late in the evening, and that was it. Fell in love with it. But didn't really sort of have an amateur background or anything like that. You know, I was training, like I had my stuff in the garage and all that stuff through school and all the rest of it. And then I joined the army, and that was really my first sort of exposure to actually sort of competition fighting and sort of, you know, getting some good training and all, and you know, getting taught. So I was probably about 15, 16 when I really started sort of like taking it seriously.
Okay, was that in the army when you did you join the army at 16 then?
Or I was 15 and 9 months. Yes,
you was 15. Oh, you was you yeah, joined yeah, the army
boy,
when it was
boy soldier. Yeah, junior soldier. I think they called it back then. Yeah.
Holy shit! Yeah, now, what year was that?
So that had been 2001, I think it was.
Oh, bloody hell!
Yeah. So yeah, went in there and that was it really. Because in there, it's like if you're good at sport, then you get let off a lot of other things, do you know what I mean?
And
like, football and boxing, that was the one for me. So yeah, just sort of cracked on with that.
I'd done the boxing for the novice Navy team.
Right, okay.
So I see, and it was something I've spoken about, I've seen the facilities.
Yeah.
And I imagine, what were the army facilities like?
Yeah, top notch. So I was up in a place called Harrogate, North Yorkshire, and that was where like junior soldiers went.
Yeah.
Because you had to carry on a bit of education as well. And yeah, like the facilities are absolutely outstanding.
Because I described it as, you know, where you've got the world class. So as you you'd say, like where you Canelo's and stuff like that. And I would put it all the GB squad. I'd put it just under, like just under world class. I would say, as in really, really fucking good.
Yeah.
So. I can imagine that the army would have been the same.
Yeah, it was good. We used to, what we would do as well, you wouldn't just have camp training, you'd be out, they'd take you out to sort of, we were in Harrogate, Yorkshire, so you'd go into Leeds and they'd arrange sort of into sparring with their local clubs as well. So we got around and did a bit, like, you know.
Did you get carded?
No, I was never carded as an amateur, ever.
No.
So
were you're in the army, how long was you in the army for?
I was about... For a year, I think. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you just stuck with, did you box throughout or?
Yeah, just like I say, a lot of it was like training in a club,
in a gym
comps,
show.
What do they call them, like gym shows and things like that, didn't they? So did all that, picked up a sort of knee injury and then sort of left the army. And then from there on, it sort of got pretty serious pretty quick with the boxing, really.
Right, so you left the army, then where did you go with it?
So basically, I left there and sort of like walked out, no real qualifications, you know, doing the usual ex-army, doing security and, you know, not much else. So, yeah, doing that and obviously just wanting a few more quid. And I was working with a security guard up when we used to do the C2C train line, all the drunks off and all that sort of stuff. And I was working with this fella, Terry, and... we was just chatting about boxing and all the rest of it. And he said he was friends with Roy Shaw's son, Gary. Roy Shaw was the... Lenny McLean and all the rest of it. So this fellow was mates with his boy and he was obviously into it and whatever. And they were speaking about the Circus Tavern and he said, oh, yeah, like, get you a fight and all the rest of it. I was like, oh, all right. So, yeah, you get earn a few quid, you know. So I was like, yeah, no worries. And we went down an unlicensed gym down in Collier Row.
Oh.
It was Rod Julian had the gym back then.
Yeah.
He's gone on to train some really good pros and things like that. And it was at the back of a nail bar. So it's proper like cowboy, like, you know, Western High.
We started at the back of a pub.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So it's a bit like I sort of walked in. I was like, what's this all about? You know, and I've gone in there and obviously, listen, I was in the army, but, you know, you're going down, you're fighting sort of boys still, you know, you're sort of between that age. I've walked in there and there's like what was his name? Fred or something, anyway.
And, Fred West.
Fred Harden. I goes in there and they're like, so I'm on the bag, like doing all this stuff and everything. Probably looks half all right, like. But, you know, I've still got that boy mentality. And then they set up some sparring. I've got in there with one of their heavyweights, you know, and he's just absolutely pummeled me. But I'm refusing to go down. Like, you know, I'm not going to go down in the sparring, do you know what I mean? And I'm just taking it. And he's just knocking me everywhere. And I've come out and I was like, you know, just carried on training. And I didn't really sort of like sell tickets or anything like that. But I remember the first fight I had, they lined it up for me. I sold about probably 10 tickets. Like that was all I had done.
Who was your show?
That was Alan Mortlock at the Circus. So that was the IBA.
You'd met Alan.
Rod was working closely with Alan at the time. So they'd lined up this show, obviously, and Alan was doing shows sort of like every single Friday and Saturday down the tavern at the time. Very busy, yeah. And, you know, like I said, this is back in the day when they were smoking around the ring and there was no smoking ban or anything like that back then. And, they lined the fight up, sort of sold about 10 tickets and went in. And I fought a guy called Stuart Cottier. His brother was Duncan Cottier, who was a really sort of like popular, well-known journeyman on the pro circuit. He had sort of over 100, 200 fights or something like that. And know nothing about him. Got in there just thinking, you know.
Respectful YouTube kind of thing,
isn't it? Oh, yeah. There was no sort of like looking on videos and things like that back then, you know. Just sort of turned up and got the name given to you. And it was like, yeah, we'll crack on. And I got in there. And to be honest, like I did think I had a bit about me, you know. But this was my first sort of competitive fight. It's
different, isn't it?
It's
different.
I completely froze. I didn't turn me back or anything like that, or I just didn't really know what was going on.
It was so quick.
And this was a man, you know, I'm fighting like a sort of probably mid 30s guy, probably had hundreds of fights, you know. And he just come at me and I just completely froze. And within the first minute or whatever, I remember Gary Bedford, a great referee, Gary.
Yeah, love Gary.
And he's waved it off. And then I'm fuming, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? I'm all right. And I was all right. But, like, sort of mentally, I just couldn't get into it.
What weight did you go in at?
So I was fighting then at about probably 12 stone. So
what weight was he at? Just out of interest.
Looking back, I want to say he had a couple of, you know, he was a man. He had a man's body. Yeah. Like, you know, I was still sort of 18, 19. I was a boy, like just turned into a man, you know. And I weren't ready for that.
Did you see him weigh in?
Eh?
Did you see him weigh in?
Oh no. They hadn't arrived yet. So yeah, it was a bit of a disaster anyway. And that was the first one. So. Yeah.
So you're on that's your first sort of like taste of unlicensed.
Yeah.
You must have got a enjoyment out of it. Then sort of how did you move forward?
I think for me it was like obviously I'd frozen. I knew what I could do, what I had to do. I just didn't do it, and it was a complete disaster. So from then it was like right back to the gym, and I trained really hard. Like, and I mean, I did really train hard. You know, I was in there, I was working on this railway, you know, sort of like doing the security and that. And then I'd go to the gym in the morning, like train. This Terry, like, sort of befriended me, was picking me up and take me to the gym. And then the next fight I had, I fought a guy called Gary Bangretti. He was from Canby Island. He was you know, a man sort of in his 30s or whatever, big lump. Big hard hitter, like he did it hard, and but we got in there, and to be fair, like back then you had Steve Oldsworth was a commentator. He used to actually commentate and do his VHS videos at ringside and all this sort of stuff, right? So it was quite a good little setup.
Mm.
So I watched, you know, watched the video back, so I'm going on what he said during the fight, and to be honest with you, into the third round he had me winning, and then right at the end, and I'm talking on the bell for the third round, he's come over with an overarm right, just swinging because he knows he's losing. And he's caught me, and I've stayed on my feet, and the bells rang. I've gone back to the corner, and he said, "Oh, that's a shame. That's probably made it a draw," and it was a draw, which I was delighted with.
Did you sell tickets that fight? Or
I did, but again, it was probably about 10 tickets. It was nothing extreme. So difficult. And but I went back to the dressing room, and I was really ill actually before the fight. I had glandular fever.
But still fault.
And, yeah, and I shouldn't have really done it because I sold a few tickets and I did train hard. So, you know, I wanted to get it done and I probably wasn't still, you know, right. And then I went back and I remember just collapsing in the change room. That was my first concussion where it hit me with that right hand.
There'd have been a lot of people out there that'd be like, no, I'm not fine. I'm not going
to
do it.
But I think that's where the first bit of mentality came in.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I went back to the change room. I just remember collapsing. There's a little, I'll never forget the little red changing room with a little sofa.
Yeah. Yeah. As you go round on the left. Yeah.
And I went in there. There's a little toilet in there, wasn't there? Yeah. And I remember just hitting the floor, just puking my guts up. And the headache. I'd never felt anything like it. And that was it, sort of what went off. But I knew at that point, like, I'm not done with it. Like,
yeah.
There is going to be more.
That red sofa, I just, little one for that red sofa, a certain person, I'm not going to name, but he is in this room, and basically got his nose broken. Yeah. And, you know, the doctor, me and the other person's brother had to hold him down whilst he had to get his nose
broken. I'll tell you another one about that.
Don't worry, you're not alone. That red sofa's got some memories in it. Yeah. In not the casting couch way either. So from there then, was that a quick turnaround then, fights then? So you've gone...
Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, so those two were a quick turnaround. And then, if I'm honest with you, I didn't... I think I maybe had one or two more. And these, you've got to remember, these were me trying to win fights on 10 tickets, yeah? So there's an issue there. You know, I wasn't going to get easy opponents because I was doing 10 tickets.
Yeah. You're pretty much an away fighter.
Pretty much. Even though you're thinking there. Yeah. Not. And didn't understand the game at that point. You know, so I was fighting other ticket sellers, you know, who were, like I say, fully developed men, thinking I was in with a chance. I wasn't there to win. But like I say, I just didn't understand that at that point.
Would you said you're naive to it? Like, you're saying, I'd admit I was naive. When you first walk in, I think it's, you go in there with the best intentions and then you go, oh, the actual game begins to open up to you.
Like I say, that first year maybe, I had no idea of what was really involved and how boxing really worked, whether it was pro, unlicensed or whatever. You know, they still operate in a similar way.
Yeah, all of them
just on different scales.
Yeah.
And at that point, I had no idea. And then I actually stopped for probably about 3 or 4 years. I didn't lace up a pair of gloves again. No.
Any particular reason or?
To be honest, I'd had a falling out with the people that I was with, that guy that took me on and under his wing and all the rest of it. So that was like on a coaching level that there wasn't anything, you know, and then you're just trying to sort of crack on and earn a few quid working and stuff like that. And it was just didn't really do anything to do with it. For a few years.
See, I think with what you're saying, like the one thing I could say I'm probably fortunate with then is that I knew you would have known that when we done yes, we're away fighters.
Yeah.
We are there to be the journeyman. And I think that I can imagine. You know the crack. And I think I can imagine it then that fire goes out quicker because you're there for the best intentions to then you're turning up and actually being an away fighter, really. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the I can imagine changing rooms and stuff were good when we were there. Great crack.
Absolutely brilliant. Like through the years, like some of the laughs I've had there.
Who was in and around when you was there?
So ignoring that first bit. I mean, well, I say ignore that first bit. I mean, I was fighting on shows where like Dominic Negus was headlining, Mark Potter was headlining. You know, like
big shows then.
Yes. And you know, like I'll come on to it a bit later, but like, you know, people like Dominic have become like sort of good friends. Mark, I used to spar with, and was a good friend. Like, obviously, just passed away recently. So they were like the main players. I think it was Shane Stanton and Darren Burford. They were like the sort of like the big boys. Mm. But I didn't really get in with a journeyman at that point because I wasn't really thinking like that's what I was.
Yeah.
So I didn't, you know what I mean?
So you want that mindset of I want to go out there, sell a few tickets, put on a show for like my friends and relatives and that, and then. Now, me and him, we was, you kind of get pushed into a lane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's, I mean, that's like, obviously, you know, exaggerate too much, but basically I had that little gap.
Did you do anything in that gap?
I was fit because I was always like involved in sports. I was playing football. I was like going to the gym, and you know, but I wasn't sort of concentrating on boxing. It was just sort of surviving and, yeah. and doing.
Would you have said
doing.
The fire sort of got taken out of you from it?
Like? Yeah, I think for me, because I didn't really like, I wasn't as such attached to a gym. Like, so I didn't have that stable of, and that's a really important thing in boxing, you know, and in fighting, is having that stable and that support network around you.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that from the get-go, really. I had a couple of people obviously saying to me, you know,
do this.
Yeah, like, you know, but that was a very short period of time for, and there wasn't.
Yeah, I can attest to that actually as well, because the one thing, where don't matter what, how I viewed, or I can imagine you're the same, Sam, how we viewed boxing or whatever, we had a great team with us. Yeah. We had such a good laugh. It was like when I walked in sort of a bit later than you guys, I've always said, but the team there, I think, made my experience and your experience a better, like...
100%, yeah.
So
yeah,
when we're turning up at places, we're just having a laugh.
Yeah.
Getting in there and then going out on the piss after and then having a laugh then. And we were doing that every weekend.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, but like I say, I just didn't have that. And that's probably why I went missing for however long I did. And to be honest, then I was working in a place and people chatting about boxing and obviously say, you know, did this, did that, whatever. And then it was like, yeah, I'll have another fight because I'll get some tickets done here, like, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. And I literally had one fight and I fought a guy, Tony Louie.
Yeah.
I mean, Tony's been around the block, like, you know what I mean? You know, and I think he still has the odd one now, to be honest. Really? And he's got to be about 60, the fella. Yeah. You know, but yeah, I mean, look, back then he was still sort of half all right, you know. I wouldn't say he was, you know, bang on it, but, and I managed to line a fight up with him and, I won the fight and, you know, three round or whatever it was, like on points, and done about probably 12 tickets this time. So, you know, going up in the world.
So you said about your network, when you went back, did you go to a different gym or went back to the same gym?
Didn't even go to a gym.
Trained
at Fitness First with a pal of mine. Turned up there with a pal in the corner that knew nothing about boxing.
Oh.
So that's how it went. And then basically what happened is I was called up by a promoter and said to, look, you know, you're not really going to do tickets, but you can move around. What about this? And how's your equity card sort of thing? And about being a journeyman. And what's that?
This is how you got to learn the other side of it.
And it was like, oh, well, basically, I've got a fight for you, but you know, you're not really gonna, you know, you can't win and this, that, and the other. And I don't even remember the fight or who it was, to be honest. And then I did that, got paid better money than I was doing, sort of probably double, treble what I was doing on tickets straight away, and that was it. Game on.
And so you're fighting in and around Southeast area, or you traveling the country?
So to begin with, I was sort of like in the Southeast, pretty much week in, week out. Wasn't really attached to a stable at that point, because I didn't really, if I'm honest, I didn't really know anyone in the game.
Right.
So I was like, because I was very fresh, so I was just sort of like, say, taking a pal down there. It sort of like, I'll just say to him, look, if this happens, do this. If this happens, do that.
Yeah.
Asking between rounds, how's it going or whatever. Yeah. Are you losing? Am I losing? Yeah, good. Right, excellent. you know, and just doing it like that, you know, which is, looking back, it was like suicide, really. It was very dangerous, really. But, you know, we had a good time. And then obviously I started meeting people in the back room.
That's what I was going to say. Is this where the conversations start coming in?
Yeah, exactly that. And that's what happened. I was still taking, you know, a friend or whatever, but yeah, I was meeting people like Mally Richardson, Marty Cain.
Yes.
Good friends.
Legends. That's what I was going to say, because when we went down there, the Irish lads, I know Mally's from Blackpool, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
We were down there when Marty and had like a load of the Irish lads down
as well.
And they were just crap. They were just mental. Absolute mental.
Yeah.
Fucking.
But some of them were very good boxers as well.
But they'll fuck with each other before the fight. They'll just fuck with each other before the fight. Yeah. And you're like, you're not, you spoke.
Your mindset's not in the right place.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you turn up and like, I know you probably agree. Like, I remember turning up and like, Marty's fucking with someone. He's just about to fight. And I'm like, why ain't he preparing? Like, I'm naive at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, later on, I'm like, yeah, let's go. Like, let's fuck it, let's do it. But the but he's just like fucking with someone, like getting the okay, like the Vaseline out and stuff like that. And you're like,
yeah,
what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? But he was great crack down there.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was good. And like I said, from then, like, you know, now we're talking sort of, I'm into 20 fights, 30 fights or whatever. So now I'm sort of...
You've got the experience.
I'm getting experience. I'm learning how to survive rather than sort of like you know, we had a chat earlier and you know, like a good journeyman isn't someone that gets knocked out in the first round. That's a terrible... You know, like obviously it happens, you know what I mean? But it's, the art of it is to stay in there as long as you can and make it look convincing, you know? And there were times where, you know, and this isn't on that circuit predominantly, you know, the other circuits where, you know... I was told, like, no, you're going down in the first round. Like, you know what I mean?
And, it happens, though.
More days later. It's unreal. And you know, but, yeah, so, like, eventually, like, I was sort of doing that and flowing with that. And then I did it. But I don't know if you know Noel Tierney. So Noel Tierney is he was Mark Potter's coach.
Okay.
And he had a gym in where was it? In Ho Street in Walthamstow. And it was KO, Club KO. And we used to, I got into there, I went down for a training session. And this man, I mean, no, I was still around, you know. He was the first coach I ever had, I'd say. Like, and I mean, like, you know.
Proper boxing.
Yeah. I went down there and you know, just wanted to train. It's paying me 40 quid a month, just train, do me fights. Get out, that was it. And he took me on the pads, and within like 5 minutes, I've learned 20 things I never knew about and all that sort of stuff, you know. And then that was it. Like, I was hooked. I started going there 5 o'clock from Essex every morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, go down there 6 o'clock and training with him because I absolutely loved it. And then I'm learning how to actually, I'm actually learning the art now.
Yeah. You know? Just I'll strip it back a sec. Just so you know, you said you're 20, 30 fights in, and obviously you spoke about the journeyman side of it. More, how was your sort of mentality at the time? Because you've sort of lost, you said you'd lost sort of that fire and then you've come back. Is it the fact, has it changed because now you know the game, or how was your mentality to stick about with all them fights?
For the journeyman
fights? Yeah, for the time until you obviously get your coach with your...
Yeah, mate. Yeah. I think for me, like, I never really had... It was money driven as well. Like, if I'm honest about it, like, I didn't really have sort of guidance outside of boxing either. So I wasn't sort of like on a career path or, you know, job to job, security this or labor, you know. And obviously, then, you know, £300 a week is a lot of money, you know, even today. Like,
yeah,
you
know, that's true.
You know, and you've got this sort of promoters offering me like a few hundred quid a week to get in there and not even no pressure.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you can sort of like, you know, get through the rounds. And that really was like the driver behind it, which is either, you know, right or wrong, really. That's what it was.
To be fair, I remember Dave Bassant.
Yeah.
So okay. I remember, I remember him speaking to, so I remember a boxer basically coming and I asked him and he was like, I was like, what's your drive? And he was the same. He was like, to be honest, this is just extra payments off my mortgage. I just get to pay more of my mortgage off with this and then all a bit of holiday money. And when he said that to me, it sort of, I sort of stepped back and I was like, actually, it's quite a good mentality to do it. I know it, you say rightly or wrongly, but if you look at it and go, okay, it's a bit money driven, all right, you're getting in, it's 12 minutes and you're getting 300 quid.
Yeah.
It's not that bad when you think about it.
Movie star wages, isn't it?
Yes, so it's I do. Yeah. So, yeah, to go to your now training with...
Yeah, so, at this point, I'm just sort of, like I say, I'm taking fights. I don't even, you know, like, I couldn't even reel off a list at that point because they were just, like, people that I just didn't really... Like I say, I'm turning up for me, though, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so like Noel's training me, you know, you've got the likes of Mark Potter in the gym, some other sort of really good fighters in there, and you're getting sparring with them, and you know, and he's just getting me really fit. Like, and I think that's the other thing as well. I was never like you know, like a lot of people go, yeah, I'm fit, but listen, you know when you're fit, when
you're fit, or there. Boxing fit.
Yeah, exactly. And I weren't boxing fit, you know.
Yeah.
And I think for me as a journeyman, it was harder because I would always go, you'd want to go on the outside, and when you go on the outside, you know, in a boxing ring, it's harder because you're putting the miles in, trying to survive, getting away and this and that. So that's quite an high level of fitness, like, you know.
Unless you're Mighty Cage, who puts his big Swede in.
Yeah, and just don't mind getting it, yeah. But at this point, I'm fighting up at heavyweight, yeah.
Okay.
I've crossed the 14 and a half stone marker. And now, so at that point, it's, and that was like, that was a really hard thing for me as well, because like below 14 and a half stone, you're sort of getting away with it. But once you cross 14 and a half, obviously then you're in heavyweight, but you can be fighting people that are like,
you're coming up against, like, big guys.
20 stone men.
Yeah.
You know, you're 14 and a half stone just on the cusp. And you want to be on the outside, trust me.
Like, yeah, no, I get that. I get they're getting it by like a big, like a heavyweight. I can imagine it's going to be massively different from getting hit by someone that's, by someone that's obviously my size or whatever, because I was fighting at like 12, just under 12 stone.
Yeah.
So, and they still hit hard. Yeah. You're not getting hit by 20 stone.
I think because that weight gap's such a big difference when you move up to heavyweight as well. So like Noel really sort of like done well with me on my feet and getting me moving a lot more and smartly as well, you know. So, like, obviously going on the outside, but being able to sort of take a break and go for a walk and all that sort of stuff. So trained me brilliantly, and then that was happening, and what was noticed, and I think it was noticed by a few people, not just myself, right? Like, and this isn't me sort of giving myself credit, but it was noticed then, like, the performances were actually like, probably could have won that, probably could win this, you know what I mean? And there was a little bit of sort of whatever. And then Noel had his own show up in Chigwell, and he put me on the show, and you know, I put in a lot of hard graft in the gym and whatnot, and he gave me a title fight. And I won it. And it wasn't a fixed fight. It was probably an easier fight because the opponent I was going to have pulled out 2 days before.
Right.
But he put on the show and I won, and I had a good crowd there as well.
Sold tickets
for it. Like, so I was married now. So I had my wife, her family, my family. And I've won. And that feeling was just like incredible. You know, I've gone through all these other fights where I'm not allowed to do that, and you know, like, I've obviously got this win, and you know, performed well and doing it fit and properly. So now I'm like, okay, you know,
you're
capable. I know that actually I can box, you know.
Okay, yeah. Then so your circuit's still southeastern Essex.
Yeah,
you do some Kent shows.
Yeah, so. So what happened was I then started getting phone calls from Joe Paul. Joe Paul Jr. He started sort of like bringing me in there. He put me in with a guy. What was his name? His name was Gary something. And he was 6'7", this fella. Absolute unit. And the video's on YouTube. And he was a big name as well, like sort of proper this, that, and the other. I remember getting in there thinking, Jesus, fuck. You know,
Joe Paul's one of the sort of founders of the unlicensed.
He's on the, in the south. He's on that, like, in that southeast London or south.
The Caesar's Palace. And,
So he inherited it from his dad, I think. His dad passed away. And they're all sort of like, you know, gangsters and or ex-gangsters or whatever they are. And lovely fella, to be fair. And I did a bit of work for him on the side and stuff like that as well. And I remember going down there and this fella was in like a proper unit. And you had like the Roy Shaw there and all that sitting at the ringside and everything else. And he said to me, like, he come over and he said, oh, like, you can't, you know, you can't win this one. Right. And I said, I was like, what? You seen this fella? And I got in there and I swear to you, right? He ran at me, yeah? And he ran at me and he was like doing all this and like swinging his arms at me and I'm getting out of the way as best I can. I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, like, you know, but like I said, he must have weighed about 23 stone and 6'7", yeah? So he's a big lad. I'm thinking, he can't keep this up, like, not a chance. But the punches weren't hurting, like there was nothing behind him. Yeah. He didn't know how to punch. And all of a sudden, I've jabbed him and he's just gone back across the ring, gone on the ropes, he's covered up. So I'm sitting there thinking, well, hello. So I've gone in and I'm just absolutely like beating him up. Like I'm just like flying around his body, his head, everything, around his neck, everything, giving him, knocked him across the ring again. Like all of a sudden I see a promoter running around the side of the ring. Crowd are going wild, they're loving it. Like, you know, this little bloke's beating up, you know, like he's going, stop it, Dan, stop it. Like that, right? He's going, you can't do it, stop it. The second round come. So Bell went for the end of the round, first round, went back to the corner, and he's come over and he said to me, like, knock it on the head now. I've gone out there, like, took a dig on the chin and fallen over, and that was the end of it.
Well, at least the acting class is coming.
Yeah, we
know someone that took a dig to the head and went down with a body shot, but never the anonymous body shot.
The ghost shot.
So we've had we know the crack with that.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I was doing like bits over that side of the water, but then like, but predominantly it was like Essex, and then we moved into Kent at that time.
Come on, Darren and Elena.
That's right. Yeah, I went on to Darren and Elena's, and Darren, like, so I met Darren up in Colchester. We were both fighting away from home, and I was fighting a guy called Josh Bond, and Shane Stewart was another one I fought out there. Two top boys, like good fighters, and. Again, probably didn't need to be paid to lose, to be honest, because I think I would have got beat. Like, they were very good. But I met Darren on that show, and we were chatting. He was actually saying to me, like, oh, I'm thinking of getting my own thing started, and would you be interested coming over, blah, 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 and sort of don't think much of it. And then, lo and behold, like, I don't know, a year, 18 months later, I got the call. So Darren and Elena, like, I expected the usual coup, like, you know, pay to lose, whatever else. And they rang me up and they said, so it would have been, it was Tony Barrett one, this was, so, because I had four with him. And I turned up there.
How many, you had four with him, but how many did you organise?
No.
What, just straight up?
Straight fights, on me life, yeah. Straight fights.
I remember he did pull out now and again, didn't he?
Right, yeah. No, I didn't know who the fella was, like, so I've turned up and they said, yeah, it's Tony Barrett. I was like, because you've got to remember, we weren't from Kent. Yeah. So we didn't know no one in Kent, like, you know. And I've turned up there and he's got a big following, to be fair to him, like, you know. And I had my wife with me, Gnoll and in the corner and a couple of others. And we got in there and to be fair, it was a good fight. It weren't, you know, like, I hear a lot about Tony, but in fairness, like, he's capable,
yeah,
but he don't train. That's his problem, yeah. So if you get through a round and a half with him, yeah, you probably got him.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. He blew out. He come on me strong the first four round, and then second and third round, I had him on the ropes and I was just pummeling him. And to be honest with you, it's a bit weird actually, because every fight sort of went the same way, but I was actually a bit pissed off with the referee over it, because it should have been stopped. Yeah, like, he was saying in the ear, no, like, I'm done.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of looking at the ref and I'm smacking him and I'm like, you know, and, you know, it didn't get stopped, and I won the fight.
Do you think Tony would train, he'd do bits? Or
I think Tony is like very capable. He's got very fast hands. I don't think he's a big puncher.
Because I've seen him fight. I see him fight Lou Darling. A while ago. And like, I've never met him. Don't know the guy. I'm not even going to claim anything. Like,
yeah.
But, you know, when you hear things, so I'm like, I'm not too sure what to expect. But I've heard about Tony Barrett through...
I've heard he was a very good amateur. I don't know how true that is.
Other naughty things, I think.
Yeah. Listen, I've heard a lot of things as well, you know. And but look, the experience I had with him is he's one of them. He's a capable fighter. Didn't train hard enough, and that's you know, would I beat him if he was fully trained? Probably. But
fair enough.
Yeah. but that again with Tony, it was like a mentality thing. Like, I mean, I can run. You know, the second time I fought him, we fought the casino rooms for a title. And I had him, it was like a 19 punch combination, I think we counted when we watched it back. Like, and he stood on his feet. Like, he takes it, he wouldn't go, like, he's mad man to put down.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, you know, I mean? Well, if you're hitting him with 19 punches,
probably not doing my job properly. Yeah. but, you know, like, sort of done that, he got Stan Nate count. I won that fight, won a title from him. And then the third fight we had, I can't even remember where the third fight was, to be honest with you. And then I fought him again up at Pete Stoughton's show. For a top another title, Southern Area title, or Kent title. And that was a good fight. It was like four rounds. We probably weren't both in the best of shapes, but we had a good fight on the inside as well. It was good, and like sort of uppercutting, hooking each other. And but again, his fitness, I think it's his fitness and his mentality lets him down, you know, honestly.
Yes.
Because once he starts getting beat, he sort of resigns himself, you know, to that, you know.
So he goes back into sort of reservation mode.
Yeah, definitely. And then he'll just swing the odd one or two, you know that big shot's coming.
So you're at this moment then, the scenes are now Kent, Essex. Have you gone elsewhere? Like, are you, because we went Plymouth in the end.
Yeah, so I think the furthest way I went was Sunderland. And that was a last minute call. And there's a bit of a story behind that. I was still with Noel at the time. And got the phone call on the Friday night from Alan Mortlock. And he said to me, I've got a pal of mine's putting a show up in Sunderland tomorrow night. Can you go down there? £800. Like, don't have to lose or anything. Like, straight flight.
Just turn up, yeah.
So I was like, happy days. Like, yeah, I'll drive up there. So got in a little banger Fiesta ride at the time. Like, I said to Mrs. and kids, see you later. I took Noel up there and one of my pals. And we flew up there, got up there about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and like didn't fight till about, it must have been nearly midnight. Like, it was a joke, because this guy was the main man, like, you know?
Oh, okay.
So I got in there, and I can't remember his name, but I tell you, he could bang. He was a proper banger. Like, and oh, yeah. Anyway, I remember he hit me a right hand over the top on the head, and didn't think much of it. Like, I think we did the three rounds or whatever it was, got me money, good as gold, trying to drive home. Like, I was all over the place, like knackered, but I kept sort of like feeling a little bit funny.
Yeah.
And so I got home, and I think it was I had air at the time.
Right? No, I've never known you were there.
So I had air. And I remember I was like, used to put your old, like, the next day, put a bit of whatever it was, gel, brew cream, whatever it was back then. Spray of brew. And I remember going, sort of like, rubbing my head. And I was like, cool, that's a bit weird. There's a lump on my head, yeah. And
like a hematoma or something.
Yeah. So I didn't really think much of it. Like, and then it sort of was like getting a bit bigger and bigger. And I shaved my hair off. And I could see this lump. It was quite visible, like, you know. And my wife was like, she was like, no, that's got to go. Like, and so she actually got me into a private hospital, pretty much quite quickly. And they literally did it while I was awake there and then. They cut my head open.
And this is where the scar is.
Yeah, that's where that scar is there. And they took it out and I was awake. Like, it was the most weirdest thing, like cutting into your head, like, you know. And they pulled it out and it was like a great big ball of blood and fat and like whatever. So apparently, I'm not a doctor, but with bruising, it forms fat around whatever to protect whatever it's bruising or whatever. And that's what they pulled out of my head, and there was blood in there as well. And they stitched it back up. And I had this ear. It was a bit of a wake-up call.
Yeah.
To an extent, because I was like, if it's the other side of that skull, then it was game over probably, you know, especially sort of just jumped in the car and drove back, which is mental.
Really. Yeah, that the driving back, and I can imagine the concussed as well everything like that. I can imagine that being quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was, yeah. So that was.
And like, then the missus be like, what if I'm
But it was like, I suppose back in the day, it was hard, like back then, because that was like literally how I earned my money. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, we had cut like little kids and that as well. And, you know, so it was, I just went straight back to it. I couldn't afford to go, oh, well, I ain't going to do it no more, you know?
Okay, so you done Sunderland, done elsewhere, or? City Pavilion. That could be a professional.
It's a really good venue.
It's such a good venue. Yeah, I'll put it out. It's such a good venue.
No, it is. It's a really good venue. And it's
very well set out as well.
Yeah. And so many like side rooms or a changing room.
Yeah.
And sort of areas and things like that. No, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, we did the pavilion and I did another fight in Aldershot. That was a mad one as well. That was another phone call from Alan, lastminute.com. I've got another mate. He needs a fighter.
Yeah.
Can you go down there? And so I've driven down there, and he was like, yeah, it's £500. I was like, oh, lovely. Got there, and the fella said, yeah. He said, you got three rounds. I was like, yeah, it's standard. He said, it's 3-minute rounds. I was like, well, I don't really do 3-minute rounds. Like, it matters. 6-2. He's like, nah, it's three minute rounds. It's in a cage. I was like, oh, lovely. That's like new, you know.
Yeah.
But it's boxing. I was like, all right, great. He said, yeah, it's against Ollie Thompson, right? So I'm sitting there.
Right, okay.
So I'm sitting there, I'm like, don't know who that is. Like, you know, and then people say, I ain't even got a corner with me. Like, I've turned up on my own. So I said, oh, I need a corner, mate. He said, yeah, so I'll sort you out. A few people coming in and out of dressing room over the next couple of hours. Oh, you're fighting Ollie, you're fighting Ollie.
Yeah.
Like, straight onto Google. Oh, right, lovely. Yeah, Britain's strongest man. So
he's big. Yeah. He's big in the MMA side of the world. Oh, he's the one that refused to fight Damon. So he was talking because them two were good mates. He refused to fight Damon.
Well, I know he beat Mark Potter in the cage. He tapped him out.
He's good. Yeah, very good. Yeah. He's a good fighter, by the way.
So the talk was then. I didn't find out till after the fight is he was going to turn pro for boxing.
Okay.
So I've got in there and I'm, listen, and the man's an absolute animal, isn't he? Like, he's a beast to look at. And we went around just jabbing, stay away, get the jab off, you know, and just see what we can do. And I was doing all right, I felt. And then if we're in the first round, and it's the only time in my life that I was knocked out, and I mean out. The next thing I remembered was on my knee. Referee's got his arm around me. He said, you all right? I said, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. Like, let's crack on. He went, mate, he said, you've been out for about a minute.
Said, what? Oh.
And it's still to this day, I've never seen a video of it. And I still don't remember the punch that done me. Because the last thing I remember, he was nowhere near me. I was jabbing and running. I just was like, what? And, you know, absolutely, it's the weirdest feeling. And I felt absolutely fine. No pain anywhere, nothing at all. When I saw Ollie in the dressing room after, a lovely fellow as well, by the way, I had a really good chat with him. And that's when he said to me, like, yeah, I'm thinking of turning pro. This was like a warm up to it all. And I was like, oh, brilliant. All right, good luck with it all. And it was in Aldershot. So I had quite a drive home because I was living in Canvey at the time. I jumped in the car and I must have got about, I don't know, sort of 6, 7, 8 mile down the road. And then it came, the headache just come. And it was like absolutely pounding. It was like no headache I've ever had. It was so bad. And it reminded me back to that time at the tavern when I was being sick after. So I knew I was concussed. And I just had to get back to the house.
Yeah.
And sort of like, yeah, got back there just on the bed. And I just remember it was just an horrific night. Just so much pain.
How many fights you had at this point?
At that point, I was...
Roughly.
I was probably in 60s or 70s.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah. So yeah. Really around the circuit, around...
Yeah. Yeah.
After that, then, are you contemplating giving it up or what's...
No, so I think like what happened then is like Noel was on about me sort of turning over.
Being a pro journeyman?
Being a pro journeyman, yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, because I was never going to do the tickets. So even if I went pro and was, you know, brilliant, it wouldn't have happened.
As we know, and obviously I've been corrected before, unlicensed, you sell tickets and you take your chance. As a pro, you need to do, before I know this, I know it's changed now, but it was 1,000 for the house, 1,000 for the opponent, and then 1,000 just to get on the show.
Yeah.
So you had to do £3,000, and that's cheap now as well.
Yeah.
To just get on the show.
Small hall shows.
A small hall show. So that's why a lot of people go as the journeyman, because money's better as well.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, absolutely. And that was all the talk then. And at the time, you had Mark Potter and John McDermott smart sparring in the gym.
Was it when John McDermott done the prize fire?
It was after Fury. I'm sure it was after Fury.
Because I think he got the Fury fight because of prize fighter, if I remember.
Right, okay.
Because I know he done, and then that Potter fought Danny Williams.
Yeah, it was way after that.
Yeah,
it was all after that. But Mark was obviously still fighting unlicensed and just knocking everyone out. So he was in
big
the gym.
Big old man.
Yeah.
Lovely gazer, by the way.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
I remember, like, because he's refed a few of my fights. Don't you remember? He's got that face where you're like, fucking hell. When you speak to him, you're like, oh, you're really nice. Do you know what I mean?
No, that's it. No, heart of gold, absolutely. Yeah. Heart of gold. And a lot of them are like that, do you know? A lot of them are like that.
I'll tell you, Pete Stoughton. Pete Stoughton's like that.
Oh, Pete's lovely.
Yeah, exactly.
I boxed Pete. Yeah. But it was like, so they were sparring in the gym, and then Noel said to me, look, like, get on the pads and that. John's coach, manager, whatever, I think CJ's name was, is here. He said, he'll have a look at you. So I was doing a bit of pad work and all the rest of it. And he was like, yeah, like, looks all right, you know, all the rest of it. And then nothing really sort of like come of it. And it was just like, it was money. Like, I'd have to get money for scans. I'd have to get money for, you know, and it was just like, to be honest, I felt actually like I'd probably make more money fighting on the unlicensed because, you know, we had 28 day bans in the pros if you got
stopped. Yeah, if you get stopped, yeah.
You know, and if you got cut or, you know, and that was likely to happen because they were obviously fighting a caliber of people where that's, you know, and you know, I could fight like 5 days a week unlicensed if I wanted to and get paid. So it just didn't add up for me. And then at the time I got my first ever like sort of real job, which was working on London Underground at night. So the plan was I was doing that, got that job on the railway so that I could train during the day.
Yeah.
And then work at night. And so the pro thing just never really sort of took
off. You not, I know it's gonna sound controversial to people that are listening, but could you not done the pro thing, and if you'd had the 28 day ban, then do the unlicensed stuff, would it?
Do you know what?
Because I know people would do that.
Yeah, and it didn't really cross my mind at the time. But looking back, I mean, I don't know. Like, I've worked with the British Border Control, which I'll come on to. Like, and I mean, they caught me out doing things then. So, I mean, I don't know how easy that is to do. I know there were pros fighting under different names on licensed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just didn't. It didn't really cross my mind, to be honest.
So, with that, just quickly, because I know we spoke about it, you done a bit of MMA as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, what a bit. So yeah, what happened there is a bit of a story. So I've got a phone call from Alan Kettle. I can't remember where I met Alan, to be honest, but he phoned me and said, I've got a kickboxing show with cage fighting on it and all the rest of it. He said, I'll give you £500, come down, do the cage fight in a ring, okay? So I said, yeah, no worries.
Bit like Pride.
Yeah, that sort of set up, yeah. And I said, yeah, no problem, like, because I was just, like, again, just £500, isn't it? You know, and went down there and with a couple of people. I took some other fighters as well, actually. And then Alan phoned me, Alan Mortlock. So we've got the two Alans now. So Alan Mortlock's phoned me and he said, I've got a show that evening. I'll give you £500 to do a cage fight. I'm like, what is going on here? So I've been phoned and booked for two shows in the same day for cage fighting, which I've never done, right? So I said, yeah, no problem. Gone out, got me MMA shorts, like, you know. So
yeah.
I've gone and done that. Anyway, I've got in there the first fight. Didn't have a clue what was that. Bloke's running at me, so I'm trying to throw punches because that's all I know what to do. And he's grabbed me round, like, sort of like arm barred me, but round the face. So I'm there and I'm like, I literally don't know what to do. Right. And then he's like wrenched it. And as he's wrenched it, I felt something sort of like pop in my face.
He's
like,
crouching. Like,
it was my mandible, my jawbone.
Right.
And I went, oh. And as he's coming again, I went, stop. Right. Something's not right. Anyway, so refs come over, paramedics, they're saying, oh, I think it's dislocated. I said, oh, right. Like, that's good then, put it back. Like, oh, well, no, you probably going to have to go to the hospital. I said, yeah, but I've got a fight later up at Brentwood Centre, you know. Yeah, well, you know, you can't be. I said, all right, whatever. I've got my money. Off I went to the Brentwood Centre. And my brother-in-law's fighting on that show. And he's half decent, like, the cage fighting. And so all the family are there, like, so. Like my wife, my father.
Oh, so you got to turn out.
So they're all there, right? And wife's like, you ain't doing it. You've got something, like your jaw's broken. I said, listen, I'm set up for a grand today, like, because Alan's giving me 500 quid and all, like, you know. So, you know, it's a good day's money.
Yeah.
So, lo and behold, anyway, I'm fighting a guy called Cole Everington. Apparently he's a face in the MMA or was, or, you know, he thought Bob Sapple was going to or something like that. Yeah. So, he absolute unit to look at. And he's called me in and he's basically this is how it's going to go. Like, I went, mate, you can go anywhere you want. Like, I'm fucked. Like, I've got a broken jaw. I've been beaten up once today. Like, do what you want. He said, yeah, I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to get you in this footlock. And I went, yeah, brilliant. Like, no problem. So we're waiting around. And my jaw weren't hurting. It was just really uncomfortable. And anyway, I've got in there with him and I've gone towards him and he's just picked me up. It's on YouTube somewhere. He's picked me up and just dumped me straight on my face, hasn't he? Which, like, I'm just, like, brilliant. Like, then his arm's been bent backwards and I'm just tapping. Like, I think I was in there about 25 seconds. Like, it was ridiculous. And but got paid. and off I went. That was £1,000 like for the day, you know. But then spent the next sort of 2 weeks off work with a broken jaw because I had to have it operated on. So basically, it equaled up.
Oh, so your jaw got proper fucked then?
Yeah, well, it was just a clean break across the mandible, the side bone in the jaw. So it was that was the first time I'd done it, and that was broken. So yeah, they operated on it, but it was quite a bad operation because I think I'd woken up and coughed in it or something and split everything, and it was quite a bad. I lost about 2 stone in about 2 weeks because I couldn't eat. I couldn't even get a soup spoon in my mouth. It was really bad. Yeah.
So you've done the MMA. You're still fighting. You're carrying on with the unlicensed scene.
Yes.
When do you carry on up until?
So I just kept going. And then, like I said, I come over to Kent and I thought, it was weird, really, because, like, later on in my career, that's when I started, like, getting actually good at boxing and winning fights. And then I won a couple of titles. I fought Rob Apps for the European title over in Kent. So Joe Eldiff was in his...
Joe
was in his corner, giving me earache for 10 rounds.
You've taken his best. He's tired.
So I fought Rob, and don't get me wrong, Rob's a tough boy, like, you know. Fought him, went 10 rounds, beat him on points, although Joe didn't agree with it. Won that, and that was my first sort of big belt, you know. And then I got the phone call for the rematch, like you got to defend it, so he wants a rematch. I said, yeah, that's fine, like, let's do it. And then the second fight, like, I think it was the second round, again, this somewhere online, and he come right at me, and I stepped back and I give him my right hand, straight right hand, and Rob's a big lad, like, you know, and I beat him, and I knew I'd hit him hard, and he went stumbling back across the ring and took the knee, which I couldn't believe, because in the first fight, I never even looked close to stopping him or putting him down, like, he was just sort of winning on points, and then, but I broke my hand.
Oh,
and I'm 2 rounds into a 10 round fight, you know, so I'm like, oh, like, please don't get up. And he's got up, and he on about 8, and Mark Potter was reffing, and they went, yeah, good to go. And then I knew I was doing 10 rounds because I had nothing to stop him with, you know. And I outpointed him, we got through it, but I took the glove off at the end. And it was swollen up and whatnot.
Numb after a few rounds.
Yeah, it was weird. It didn't so much hurt, but you're just conscious of throwing it. And I could just feel it swelling inside the glove. Like, I was like, beautiful.
Did the doctor try and just put it back in? Like his eyes.
But it reminded me, like, earlier on, we were talking about, like, the broken nose thing with yourself.
Yeah.
And I remember fighting Victor Smith. Don't you know Victor?
Yeah.
He's a very good fighter, like, and ex-pro and, like, IBA world champion and whatever. And he had some great fights. And I fought him. And this is when I was still in Knowles. Obviously, like, I was getting bigger fights now because I'm training, I'm looking good in there, you know what I mean? So, I fought Victor, and I think we was in about the third round. I got through 2 rounds with him, which was amazing. I knew I was going to lose a fight, but I was just like, if I could survive
just out of talent,
you know, like, I was so happy that I got through the rounds. And he come in at me, and he sort of touched me on the back of the head, and I put my head down, biggest mistake you can do, like, put my head down, eyes down, straight up the middle, felt my nose go. And, like, there was just blood claret everywhere, like, and it got stopped, like, so straight into the red room, onto the famous sofa. And Dr. Youssef's there, like, sort of cracking it back.
Oh, mate, the sound, the sound.
Mine was like,
it was curled around, and I've got one arm, he's fucking fighting me his brother. Obviously, his brother's like, slightly bigger than him, but he's like basically throwing us to a bat, and you're just hearing the crack. He's going, fucking hell, get the fuck off me.
And I was like, oh, my fucking eyes were in. He's going, no, don't look
at it. He's going to be like, I've got to do it before it sets. So I'm sitting there, and they're doing the same. They're holding me and all the rest of it. Noel's sitting there absolutely wetting himself, like, thinks it's the best thing ever.
It's so funny.
And he's got it straight, and he's going, is that straight to everyone? And Noel's going, no, do it again. Get off.
The good famous Red Room with his nose.
Yeah.
So is it you just fighting every weekend?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, just sort of cracking on, just taking fights, you know, sort of here and there, and up against whoever, really. So just carrying on with the journeyman. But I had like a It's a bit weird, isn't it? Because like you have that like circuit where like, yeah, I'm a journeyman, I'm losing, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But then I had certain circuits where I was actually going and winning fights, you know, like sort of Darren and Elena show.
Yeah.
Because then I defended that. That's where that other fight was with Tony Barrett, sorry. I defended that European title for the third time, and that was against Tony Barrett.
Oh, yeah.
And we turned up there, and it was like obviously scheduled for 10 rounds, and Tony started arguing, saying, no, I'm only doing six because I haven't been training. And it was like,
right.
Yeah, this is weird. Like, you know, that's not really my problem, is it? Like, but I was forced to fight him over six rounds. And to be honest with you, I absolutely annihilated him. Probably the biggest annihilation of him, my dad, over the four fights was that fight. I mean, and again in that fight, and if, like when you watch the video back, it's brutal. Like, I'm actually calling the referee over and telling him to stop the fight.
And usually, like, I've been on a licensed show. Some promoters just go, yeah, I've got my uncle to do the referee.
Yeah,
my brothers. You don't know fuck all about boxing. Yeah. And you're like, mate, come on.
Yeah. I mean, this ref apparently it was. I can't think of his name. It was a bald fellow that was reffing from at the time. Apparently, he was like a really good referee in that. But I mean, it got to a point where like it was horrible, right? I was, you know, and look, a lot of fighters would have just loved that, you know. I think where I was a bit more seasoned, a bit more.
Yeah. Sort of so like, you come into yourself as like, I'm going at it, but I don't really want to actually hurt someone. They've got family kind of thing.
Well, that's what I mean. His family were in that corner. Yeah. And I was absolutely pummeling him and just smacking him, and he was telling me to eat him again, and it was just like, what's this about? Like, you know. So it's bad refereeing, and obviously, like, I come on to like refereeing and that, like, you know. But for me, that was pretty naughty. Yeah.
How did you find friends and family took your like? Did you find because? I find that people don't understand journeyman. So you say about turning up and losing. The point of a journeyman is to create, even unlicensing, is to, especially when you've got a ticket seller who's maybe a novice or something like that, is to create a boxer out of someone. It's why everyone fights there. Like, AJs, everyone fights a journeyman. Yeah, yeah. How did you find the friends and family took it?
To be honest with you, I think quite well, really. Like, so, like, you know, like, people I spoke to about it and all the rest of it, like, I didn't really go around, like, sort of announcing it to the world and that, like, at work and stuff like that. But people I spoke to, I think there was respect there because I actually sort of, even now, have more respect for journeymen than I do winners.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not talking elite level fighters here, am I? I'm talking, like, journeymen down at sort of, like, small shows and all the rest of it. You know, because they're the ones that are getting taken the licks and, you know, sort of like having to earn their money. So
with
speak,
a mentality I cannot describe as well, because you have to have a great mentality for it. Because
I think so. Like, yeah, well, listen, firstly, it's understanding why you're there, isn't it? Mm. I think that's the biggest thing, which I did like later on. But yeah, like you have to have, you know, like I said to you, a promoter doesn't want to give you 300 quid to fall over in the first round. He wants to give you 300 quid because he wants you to put on the show, get the rounds out, get the other boy experience.
With the hardest and potentially loneliest sport in the world.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's been times I've gone home bleeding and that, and you're going home on your own, like, you know, there's no one there picking up the pieces, like, and you're battered, you know.
See, actually, we've been quite lucky because I think every time we went and done it, we ended up ended up out just having a drink and having a laugh.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's the thing. I mean, don't get me wrong, later in life, it was all right because I had my wife and kids. And, you know, like, my little kids used to always come and check on me, like, you know, like, he's 15 now, like me saying it, but, like, when he was, like, 2-3 years old, like, he'd come over and give me a kiss and make sure I'm all right and that, and I'd be sitting there, like, bruised up and whatever, you know, and the wife, you know, but that's what you did, like I say. And I think the mentality, like, what I always say is, like, if you do that because you've got something to do it for.
Yeah.
Like, there ain't no good me doing it now because I've got a good job now. I've got, like, career prospects. I've got a nice house. I've got, like, family. Why would I be doing it?
Yeah.
And I came back for, you know, fast forwarded a slightly little bit, but, you know, I came back for a fight after a two-year break back in sort of 2017-18, I think it was, and just as like a sort of like returnee goodbye sort of on my terms fight. Yeah. Not a fixed fight by any means. I thought Troy Matthews, who isn't the most sort of talented fighter, but he's just a big strong boy and he ain't going to fall over for me. But I remember being in there and taking like a couple of shots and just thinking, why am I here?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, and I got through the fight, I won the fight, but it was like, I couldn't do this now, you know?
Yeah.
I had to do it to put food on my table, pay my bills or whatever it was, and that was the only reason for it.
You spoke about the British Board of Control.
Yeah, so basically I really liked the idea. When I stopped fighting, I'll tell you what happened. I went down to Ben Frankham.
Yeah.
So Ben was putting on a few shows, wasn't he? Right, and he said to me, "I've got a fight for you against a fella, Dan." It was proper ropey. We got down here. It was in the middle of a rugby pitch, just a boxing ring there. Like, you know what I mean? I was like,
no stands. Like, it's just
yeah. Literally, just a load of people standing around watching. Like, you know, so proper old school. And I fought a guy called Grant Dickinson. And no disrespect, but he was rubbish. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, he probably a bit of a street urchin, like, with fighting, but he couldn't box, you know. And I took him apart like pretty quick. And Ben like gave me some dough and was like, great. We got chatting. I said, look, I wouldn't mind doing a bit of refereeing that, because I think there's struggle for a referee that day. And that was like saying I had a bit of interest in, you know, because I knew I weren't going to be fighting for much longer.
Yeah.
So, in fairness to Ben, he gave me his next show, and it was quite a big show. It was an all-day thing, 20 odd fights or whatever, and he gave me it, and it was my first day reffing ever. He gave me like 80 quid. It was like, okay, but I just wanted the chance to see, you know, and that's how I got into it, reffing, and then like sort of got involved promoting since. But with the British Boxing Board of Control, obviously, you know, like they've got all the rest and everything else. So I thought I'd sort of like email, I found their top man at the time was a guy called Richard Barber, and he was like the head of the officials or whatever it was for the South. And I just sent him an email. Didn't really expect much, nothing much. And he come back to me and he said, look, I can't really, like, refereeing, basically, like, there ain't no courses or nothing like that at the minute. He said, but there's a chance to be an inspector. So it means you, like, sort of walk them out. You're in the corners between rounds, checking nothing's going on, like, dodgy, checking the glove backstage, making sure, just help me, like, with all the fighters and that, make sure the rules are being abided to. So I thought, well, that might be a way in, you know. So I got in. And I did a like cut like your call with him, and then he got me on the David A comeback show against
is that Demore? Yeah.
Well, like if you have a look on there when they're walking out, I'm with Demore walking him out through the O2. It was absolutely like mad experience.
Oh, I love that.
And like I see David and like spoke to him, pictures and all the rest of it. So I started doing that, and then I did that a good few times. Like I was working with Barry McGuigan and what was it, George Groves on the Copper Box show, fought an Italian fella there. Like, so I've done like quite a few of those. But to be honest with you, like it was just, I think with a British board, it's really clicky.
Yeah.
Like really, really
clicky. If your face don't fit.
Do you know what I mean? And I think like, I was like a big bald bloke with tattoos, do you know what I mean? And like, I don't think I was ever going to get the chance to do the refereeing, like, because I weren't coming from the amateurs or background of pro boxing or whatever else. So I just didn't feel like it was going to work for me. And that was the only reason I was doing, because you don't get paid as an inspector either. Like, you're just there. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So
it's voluntary.
Yeah, it's sort of voluntary, but I just thought I'd do it for a time. But then I'll tell you what happened is I was refereeing unlicensed still. And they basically got wind of it. There was a poster went up with my name on it. And they literally called me in and were like, look, you know, you can't be doing that. I went, oh, right, yeah, sorry, blah, blah, blah. And then like a few months later, it happened again.
Right.
They rang me up and started giving it to me a little bit. I was like, no, you're all right. Don't worry about it. You know, because I still got to pay my bills. Like,
yeah.
You know? So I was with the Board of Control for a little while. I was really interested in that, like sort of like loads of people. I was on Sky Sports and all that sort of thing and like really enjoyed it, you know. So, yeah, it was good.
And then you now ref.
Yeah, so I sort of like I say, Ben gave me an opportunity. Then after that, I met a guy at Ben's show. Like I chat to everyone, like, you know. And I've met a guy at Ben's show, Terry someone, can't think of his surname. And then Ultra White Collar Boxing. He was one of the gyms they were using for their stuff.
Terry Hathaway?
No, not Terry Hathaway. I've got a good story about him, though. And he plastered my ass the other week. Good plaster. fella was got me in because the referee had dropped out on the night for the ultra white collar. And so I went down there. They said, oh, well, like, we'll give you sort of a couple of £100 like he refed the show. I said, yeah, like, and the owner of Ultra White Collar Boxing was at that show that night, John Leonard, I think his name is. And refed the show, all went really well. And John said to me, look, I'll use your week in, week out. So sort of jumped on that. And I was like reffing Saturdays, Sundays, earning more than I was as a journeyman as well. And that's how I just started. The name just started getting about. And then I'd get a phone call from this promoter, that promoter, like, and just sort
it's
of
good, man. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, jump in like that. And yeah, and there ain't a lot of referees, good referees, that have got like have been a fighter. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So obviously when. Yeah,
and probably with your experience as well, I can imagine.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. Like, and it really helps as well. Like, it really does help. Like, because you know, you can look at this and like you've been fighters as well, right? And you know when someone's ready to go. Like, do you know what I mean? You can just see it, and it does help with the stoppages and things like that. Then a friend of mine from school, Danny Morgan, started doing shows for the Golden Gloves down in Essex, and he had loads of shows. I was his sole referee and sort of advisor and stuff as well. And that went really well. And then Alan Mortlock from the IBA phoned me this year and said about, and I've been with Alan since I was 18. So,
yeah.
You know, and he said, look, you want to come on board? And he's got stuff in the pipeline that, you know, he's going to make the shows a lot bigger. We've now got Ian John Lewis reffing with us. He's now away from the pro board.
Yeah,
yeah,
for a bit.
Yeah, trying
to get him on here, but he's...
I think we want to try and get him on, but we'll wait for him to deal with everything.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff that he can't say and not say.
Yeah, I know that, and I've put it on record. I think you've put it on record. I feel for him.
He's a lovely, lovely fellow as well. Working a bit with him at the minute, and yeah, so yeah, reffing's going really well, and I'm doing a lot of stuff with there because there was a deaf front there up in can't remember the area. It wasn't on any of Alan's shows or anything like that, but basically he's
put, it's a white collar, wasn't it?
Yeah. So he's put a lot of safety.
Like Huddersfield, I think. So
I'm not too sure. There's actually been a couple now, to be honest. And Alan's all about safety now, like, do you know what I mean? And so he's brought me in doing a bit of stuff on the safety side of it, making sure the weights, he's sort of come on since sort of back in the day. Just working on that.
Okay. Oh. Who's like the best fighter that you thought that really sticks out?
I fought Dominic Negus. That one's always going to haunt me. So
right.
He was just superb. Just pinpoint, you know.
What about like the best venue?
Best venue. I think, like, for me, I think the tavern, like, I know a lot of people don't like it. It's quite broken as hell. I hate it. It's a very broken place. But atmospheric, like, you know, like the atmosphere there, I do love it there. I think, like, City Pavilion was fantastic.
City Pavilion, honestly, if the City Pavilion could get signed off for a pro, it would do so well.
No, it would, and it is. That is a great. It's a lot, like, obviously, cleaner, more modern, whatever. I think, like, when I say about the tavern for me is just the atmosphere.
Mm.
Like, when you get enough people in there on the night, it's rocking, like, you know. But yeah, I think the City Pavilion. I boxed at Coco's in Camden. That was a decent venue as well. Yeah.
What's next for you then? Just reffing.
Yeah, I think for me now, just do the reffing. Do the safety stuff with Alan or whatever way that sort of pans out and goes. But I've got my career now and everything else. I don't get too involved. You always think about sort of coaching and this sort of thing. But it's hard now, isn't it? Like,
do you want your kids to do it or not?
Nah, they're not really them sort of kids, to be honest. I sort of kept them like, honest away from it. Yeah. You do a bit of pads when they're younger and all that, don't you?
Yeah,
last thing I want to do. The thing is, I wouldn't want them to be in a position where they've got to go and do it, you know?
Yeah, true. Yeah, I'll give you that.
You know, so, but look, obviously, if they ever come to me and said, I want to do it, I'm going to do it, or whatever, then I'd be there and try and direct them. Yeah, because, you know the game now, don't you?
Yeah.
Like we spoke about earlier, I was naive. I didn't have that guidance, you know?
So we like to ask our guests their perfect fighter through different attributes, like picking, like, but I'm gonna put you on the spot here.
Picking
different fighters for different attributes. If I was to say, if you, your best, who you think is the best fighter through like footwork,
this is for pros, yeah?
Yeah, or whoever, anyone, like, if you was just
to. Footwork wise, you've got to go with Mayweather, ain't you?
Boxing IQ.
I'd go with. That is a tough one. You've literally stumped me. I think probably like modern day, like be like the Usyk or someone, you know.
Okay. What about punch power?
Punch power. I'll go Mike Tyson. He's one of my favourite fighters, yeah.
Chin.
Yeah, yeah, that's really tough on the spot, isn't it? Normally, I'll just be like, yeah, bang, bang, bang. I'm going back, like, trying to think, like, 80s, 90s and things like that. Bloody hell. Got to throw some at me, lads. I can't.
Oh, well, what about, like, attacking prowess?
Attacking?
Yeah.
I think, obviously, like, sort of go back to Mike Tyson again. I think he's absolutely, like, sort of dynamite, like, exciting fighter, fearless as well, you know?
Defensive work?
I actually think I'm relating to heavyweights because that's where I've sort of like always watched them at, you know. Obviously, like, you've got the Mayweather, isn't it? Like, it's the obvious choice for that, you know. But I think Tyson Fury's defence is actually very, very good, you know.
Yeah, and then chin.
Chin, yeah, the chin is a tough one. It's a really tough one. I'm actually stuck on the chin.
Really stuck.
We'll bring you back another.
Yeah. I literally can't think.
It's a right,
I've got a question for you. Because heavyweights.
Yeah.
AJ Dillian White, what are you picking?
Joe, it's tough this time around. I would say I've got a bad feeling AJ.
Yeah.
Would win it. But I would be rooting for Dillian.
Yeah.
Because I think he's done things the right way, you know, and I think he just deserves that moment, you know.
No, fair enough. Is there anything we've missed that you want to add? Or?
No, I think so. No.
Oh, well, thank you for joining us. Again, I'll say if you've liked the content, join our Patreon, £3 a month. Also, just get on our socials, JMS Boxing Podcast. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.